From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made at High Falls State Park. Opening day, it's 2026, 2027, maybe 2029, whatever. Forget the year. Imagine a real High Falls State Park. What will you find there? How about a boardwalk area closer to the base of the falls, looking up at the water, or families strolling on trails, or overlooks, an amphitheater, pavilion, an ecology center, an area for kids to play, an accessible shoreline, interpretive areas, a pedestrian bridge, maybe a festival going on. This is getting much closer to the reality side of the ledger, not just an idea, not only a wish list. Here's how my WXXI colleague Brian Sharp described it in February. Quote, state officials are seeking a design firm to create the blueprint for a future High Falls State Park. The park would extend north from the base of High Falls, encompassing several dozen acres down in the River Gorge. It is part of a city that is largely off limits to the public today. This is the second time that the state has sought design firm proposals. The last time was in the fall of 2022. The process was halted for procedural reasons, but it drew a bigger response than expected, end quote. And as Brian Sharp notes, the goal is to hire a firm this spring and begin public meetings. Really, very soon here, there's a lot happening now, and some of that outreach has already been happening at the grassroots level with the Genesee River Alliance and Greentopia. Design work is likely going to take some time, probably more than a year. Remediation work along the 3-quarter-mile-long stretch is underway, could last another 5 years. But if there's one thing that local leaders consistently say about this piece of land, it comes down to one word: underutilized. There's this beautiful space full of potential, and it's mostly off limits. It's overgrown, it's wasted. A state park could change all of that. One rendering even had a beach on the west bank of the Genesee River. And there are some events coming up that will offer a chance for more people to get involved and learn more as this state park takes more shape. My guests this hour are here to explain. Let me welcome Lisa Barron, Executive Board Chair for Greentopia. Lisa, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And welcome to William Price, a board member and acting executive director for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Bill, thank you for being here. So let me start, Lisa. You probably fell out of your chair when I said 2026 at the start when we were 27. Okay, 29. Well, realistically here, what is your best dream for when this thing opens?
My best dream? Well, right now as we speak, RG&E and others are continuing the cleanup of the former BB site. And I don't think that'll be done until maybe next year.
Okay.
But this is a phased cleanup because the park is on both sides of the river. And RG&E has another facility, a small, well, lab on the Bausch & Lomb side of the river, that east side of the river, that may need some cleanup too. So I think the park is going to be phased, right?
Sure.
So the first phase might start in a year and a half, two years. Mm-hmm. As soon as they finish the cleanup at BB, we could start, right? So I'm hopeful. Maybe you said 26, maybe the end of 26?
For a part. Obviously
for,
not
for part
not
of
everything
park.
That we're going to see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but maybe 2030, that we're going to see the whole park.
I would hope so, yeah.
Okay.
I would hope so.
But when we talk about hope and we talk about looking forward, Lisa, for so long this has been kind of pie in the sky. And can you describe for listeners how real you think this is now?
Well, the governor made the official announcement in 2022. She committed $6 million to hire a design team to start the process. You mentioned that the original request for proposals was clawed back, but has been reinitiated this year. Proposals are all in. They're interviewing the final candidates as we speak. And we should have a design team by mid-May.
I told Lisa that we've heard multiple people who've been to your presentations in the community who have reached out to us to say, I walked away very excited about this, you know, that something really rung people's bell. Why do you think people are as excited as they are? And are you starting to sense that, feel that same way?
You know, to have this type of green space created in the middle of your downtown, it could be a mini Central Park, right? With all kinds of interesting programming and features that belong to Rochester, New York. The state is so good at creating parks, but urban parks are a brand new concept in America in general. And so I think we have an opportunity because we have such a long runway before we cut a ribbon to really influence what goes into our urban state park.
Fair enough. Bill, do you feel like that the vision for this that we've seen in different renderings, and I just looked at, you know, this morning I went back to my colleague Brian Sharp's reporting, and, you know, there's different renderings and families there and, you know, platforms and an expanded boardwalk area that looks up at the falls and, you know, a really accessible beach on the west side of the Genesee River. Does all of that look realistic to you? Can you kind of take me through how you see the role of CDC in this project?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I would say that what you see in the renderings are indicative of a fairly typical design or planning process when you're considering creating a park. You know, these are all the kinds of activities and features that you would normally associate with a park, and in many of our state parks here in upstate and the Finger Lakes region. The Design Center has handled a lot of public engagement over the past 24 years or so. We've had over 50 design workshops in various neighborhoods, and in fact, we've had design workshops in every neighborhood that touches on both the east and west side of the river. So we've had our own history here with neighborhoods and working with different user groups, different business associations, just not specifically on a High Falls State Park. So what we try to bring to this is the process of having a design workshop, how to get people to come out to it, and how to get people to move past all the jargon of urban planning and urban design and some of the concepts, try to make them more understandable to people, mm-hmm. so that, you know, regular citizens and business owners who are stakeholders in this can contribute to the process and feel like their voice is heard.
So let me ask on that point. What would be a final result for this state park that would be less inclusive than your goal is and that would be an error in execution?
Well, that might be hard to measure, but I would say a park where anyone doesn't feel welcome. I think the goal here is, you know, for the designers, for state parks folks, for Empire State Development, for ourselves, Greentopia and Community Design Center, is who are we designing for? And I think logically, everybody involved would say, well, for everyone. Well, then we have to consider everyone. We have to consider all user groups, all cultural backgrounds, all socioeconomic classifications that we have in the city. So we have to be very careful here in the early process, both the designers and the state, but also ourselves in making sure that we've reached out to as broad a cross-section of the community.
Well, one of the first questions I got this morning was, is this going to be a gated park with a cost for entry?
That is our very first question, is just access. The term access, you know, is, yes, physically, how do you get here? If anybody's been out here, you'll notice that there's not a lot of ways to get down there. We have Fall Street, and then SunTrue is an old road right away down off the Bow Street Bridge up near Upper Falls Boulevard. So those are really your two access points, and hopefully there are other connections made in the future via elevators or something. But the question of access is, you know, you know, do I go to Letchworth State Park and I pull in and I got to pay $10, you know, for maybe it's less, maybe it's more, but do I have to pay that for my car going in? You know, is that the same thing that's going to happen here? I'm a resident. I live only two blocks away or a block away.
Yeah.
Do I have to pay to get in? So, you know, that will be a big part of this, probably the very first question when we work with the designers, the planners, and with the state, when we start talking about programming and then long-term operations and maintenance, and how are they going to pay? How are they anticipating paying for the operations and maintenance and programming? So that is a very, very first question.
I'm thinking of places like Hamlet. Megan Mack, what is Hamlet? Like $7, something like that? Something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to discount the idea that there has to be some kind of money to help upkeep going forward, but can you exempt neighbors? Can you exempt people who live a certain distance, et cetera? Is that possible?
It's possible, sure. And I think we see in a lot of instances in municipalities, you know, if you have a resident sticker, you know, you're a resident of the city or of an immediate neighborhood, then you're exempt. Or if you get there by some other means other than a car.
Right.
You know, maybe it becomes, you know, that, you know, if you're driving a car there, then you've got to pay. But if you're walking or you're biking, then you don't have to pay. There's a lot of ways to consider that, but it is a very important aspect.
Walking and biking or taking a bus, perhaps.
Or taking the bus.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You're nodding over there, Lisa.
Yeah, I think, so in 23, Greentopia and Genesee Land Trust partnered to push out a survey to ask Rochester, to start this conversation going, to ask Rochesterians what they wanted in their urban state park. And to your point, one of the major concerns was cost. You know, is this going to cost us a lot of money, or will it cost to get in? So the other major concern was safety. And that, you know, we had 1,400 responses to this survey, and safety cut across urban and suburban respondents. So that's another major consideration for the state, because it's, I don't think, on their radar so much for parks like the Adirondacks or for Letchworth. You know, certainly there are hazards in those parks, and people need to be rescued in those parks, but the safety issue is a concern for everybody downtown in Rochester right now. So
okay, so we're talking about a new High Falls State Park, which, as our guests have explained, will probably open in phases. There may not be a singular opening day. And there's in a moment, I'm going to ask Lisa Barron to kind of take us through you know, what is often a very visual presentation, but she's going to do a great job for the listening audience to kind of take us through the possibilities. Lisa is joining us here from Greentopia, and we're talking to Bill Price from CDC Rochester, who is, of course, involved. And you've got events coming up here, May 2nd, May 4th. Do you want to tell the community about what's coming up?
Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, we've got two and a half events planned right now. The first is a leadership breakfast at on Thursday, May 2nd, and that will be a morning opportunity for elected officials, for county officials, city, state, and some of our peer organizations in sustainability to come and talk about the project. And it's a precursor to and a pre-discussion to the design workshop, which is going to be held on Saturday, May 4th, right here in High Falls area at MCC's downtown campus. And that will be from 8:30. We'll get introductions and things kicked off at 9, and we hope to wrap up by 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon. We have one other event at the Design Center at 115 East Main Street on the 3rd. That's Friday. We participate in the First Friday events, and we're going to have a community conversation in our gallery space at 4:30 in the afternoon.
So they want to see you there, right, Bill?
Yes, they do.
They do. They want to see the public there.
Yeah.
Bill said from the outset here, CDC and everyone involved has wanted to make sure that as many people from the public who want to have their voice heard as possible can do that, and that it's not just sort of a token opportunity, but it is a real opportunity to talk through ideas, learn about not only what the community wants, but everything from safety to access, et cetera. So the event's coming up, and in our show notes later today when the show posts, we'll have that series of events for people if they want to attend some of these events coming up in the next couple of weeks here. So, you know, Billy, when you mentioned the access issue, so set aside what it might cost to get in the park. Just think about the fact that, you know, here we are down in High Falls. And one of the first things that really hit me when I came down here to work more than 10 years ago was how gorgeous it is and how few people I know in Rochester come here regularly. I've said many times on this program, the Pontarren Bridge is one of my favorite places in Rochester. And they're, of course, redoing it. It's going to be even better. But I love this area. I'm also aware that when I look around just the physical space, it's hard for me to envision, like, where would you put more parking, or how would you create access? You talk about elevators. Is this the number one challenge facing this project, or do you say, look, we've got experience, we can figure that out?
Well, you can figure out the physical access.
Okay.
It is a challenge.
Yeah.
And not every park has quite the same change in topography. You have 100 feet from the top of the gorge. You know, we have a 96-foot waterfall, and, you know, the land around is a little bit higher, so you do have those challenges. What we're not challenged with is asphalt in this area. So we have a lot of parking. I think it's, you know, how do we do this and not feel that we have to create a 500-space parking lot down in an area where we're now just cleaning it up?
So there's more parking than I probably realized on the east and west of the river?
Yes.
Okay.
Both sides.
Both sides,
yes,
of the river. Okay. So there is parking. Yeah. And I should have known that, by the way, because Rochester, if it has nothing else, it has lots of parking lots. It really has a lot of parking lots.
Yeah.
So there's parking. You can figure out a way to kind of maybe refit those to work. Okay. And then maybe elevators, you know, different staircases, et cetera. That's part of the plan.
Right. It's, you know, I was working with the city of Rochester in the late 80s and early 90s. We redid the Triphammer Forge project. It was an archaeological site. And we got in there, redid the water wheel. That's now 30 years ago. It's hard to believe. But we know that there's actually a staircase cut into the rock from the Triphammer down into the gorge, and that there are other turbines still to be uncovered down there. So there could be a lot of, you know, these smaller, more intimate ways of getting down there as this gets built out.
So Lisa Barron, remind people, the actual acreage is how much? What are we talking about?
It's 40 acres total.
40 acres.
On both sides of the river.
Okay, so it's a good amount of land.
It's a good amount.
And and the site now primarily, I mean, for people who haven't, which is probably most of the listening audience, has not spent a lot of time in High Falls, because that's a shame, and that should probably change, and that will change with this. What the site has been used for over the years, what it is now, Lisa?
So the Brown brothers in the late 1700s, early 1800s, discovered a waterfall here and pretty much started the impetus of sealing it off from the public and using it for industry. So High Falls was the first industrial park in the city of Rochester. It used the water. The Brown brothers constructed Brown's Race to channel water into buildings that were manufacturing flour from all the wheat we used to grow here, machine tools, hand tools, parts for fire engines, you name it. It was made here in High Falls. And as a result, the public really has not had access to this area in well over 150 years. So
pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
What's the shape of most of the 40 acres right now?
You know, it's, believe it or not, when you can stand on the Pontarren Bridge again, which you can't, but if you were to drive over to the brewery and look down, you can see a park almost.
Oh, absolutely.
On the, you know, the shape, the that's grassy. There are animals. I have a perfect window from my office down below. I see wild turkey. I see deer. I see an occasional fox. I've seen beaver. So it's full of life, and it's waiting to be discovered, quite honestly.
And some of the designs. Well, let me do this. Do you want to take listeners through what you think are the likely aspects that could be included and what you'd want them to start envisioning in their minds?
You know, according to the survey that I mentioned earlier, the top three, four things that people want to do in our new state park are hike and walk, relax, read educational signage, because don't forget, there's so much history emanating from this area. High Falls was the birthplace of Rochester. So many people were involved in its inception and in its glory days. Kodak Tower is looming over High Falls, right? It's got so much history to explore and understand. And then the third thing is events, right? People want to go there to have an event and see an event, and also picnic. So, and last but not least, take photographs of the falls. But, you know, I think we have a really good chance of doing all of those things, right? And I've had conversations with Kurt Long, who's the CEO of the RPO, and he is very, very enthusiastic about the creation of the park and maybe an amphitheater down below for a summer home for the RPO and for others.
Summer outdoor concerts at High Falls State Park.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that would be terrific.
Okay. But you want to add to that, Bill?
Well, your first question was around, you know, tell us what this looks like today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the late 80s, there were actually still quite a few buildings down in the Lower Falls area that originally associated with gas production with RG&E.
Yeah.
And those buildings are substantially gone now. There's a major cleanup going on. The first RG&E cleanup began, you know, back even when BB Station was still there and we were developing the High Falls Urban Cultural Park, but they did a major cleanup north of the Pontarren Bridge between Pontarren and the High Falls. So that area was cleaned up in the early 90s. That's a very, you know, green, grassy area now. And if you do look over in the what we were going to consider the northern portion of the park, which is on the east side, that most of the buildings are gone. You can somewhat see some foundations, but it's very grassy looking. You do see, you know, deer herds and lots of birds in there. So it already does look green and park-like. You know, sans the construction equipment that's down there doing the cleanup on the west side now.
So it's one thing for Brown's Race to have a history there. For RG&E to have a history there, does that complicate things, Bill?
No, I think RG&E has a very long and important history here. You know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we had upwards of 8 to 10 different power companies here, all somewhat focused in the High Falls area, but some using gas, some using electricity, and everybody was kind of competing for city contracts to light the street lights. And at some point in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they all got together and formed RG&E. And that's kind of how that all came about. And it was actually run by RG&E. The initial RG&E was run by the Judson family that are still here in Rochester today, have a very long history in this community. So Judson was the first president of RG&E. And really just the whole history of power production and energy is an important educational aspect of this that can contribute to everything that's gone on here over history.
Listeners, if you've got questions, comments, as we talk about a High Falls State Park, I mean, they'd like you to come to one of these events coming up that we're going to list as part of our show notes later today. But if you want to call the program and weigh in, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. You can email, I should say it's 263-WXXI for calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, it's connections@WXXI.org. After we take our only break of the hour, we will talk about some of your feedback on these questions. I've got some emails already and like to see more from you as you think about what you want to see at a state park at High Falls, one of the really wonderful natural spaces in our community. It's going to be a state park, and it's going to take time to get there, but it is not just pie in the sky, never going to happen anymore. There's a real commitment here. That's why Lisa Barron, Executive Board Chair for Greentopia, is with us. Bill Price is acting Executive Director for the Community Design Center of Rochester. And we'll come back to your feedback on the other side of this, our only break. Coming up in our second hour, I'm joined by Dr. Jonathan Plucker, who is in Rochester today. He is one of the country's foremost experts in gifted and talented education. And he says in a lot of ways, American education is getting it wrong when it comes to gifted students. So how? And what do we do about that? We'll talk to Jonathan Plucker next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before I grab your phone calls and emails, I want to note one part of this I think that's pretty interesting when we talk about a High Falls State Park. So yes, I'm kind of a thorn in Rochester's side when I chastise you for not spending more time in High Falls, which is beautiful. But you might say, well, look, you know, some businesses have closed, et cetera. Hey, Sanctuary just opened up. It's a coffee shop right here. We're all very happy down here in High Falls. Lisa Barron is nodding vigorously with that. Wonderful food over there. But there's slowly, I think, more life coming back. It's a great place to walk. There are geocaches to find with you or your kids. The Pontarren Bridge is going to be back open eventually, and it's a wonderful place to be. The brewery, of course, is there. So I sort of sound like an evangelist, but what I want to acknowledge is it wasn't until last summer that I went to Letchworth, which is amazing. So, you know, I'm like, I'm kind of the world's biggest hypocrite here because I think High Falls is great, but I work here. I'm here all the time. I went to Letchworth last year. And if I'm reading this correctly, the tallest waterfall in Letchworth is the Middle Falls, which is 107 feet. The waterfall here in High Falls is what is it?
96.
I mean, it's almost the equivalent of the tallest waterfall over in Letchworth. And Letchworth's lower falls waterfall is 70 feet. I mean, so this waterfall is a natural feature that any city in America would love to have and would probably find a way to utilize a little bit more than we have over the years. But what you're hearing today is the story of why that has happened and what it is going to be. So that's why our guests are here, and that's why we're looking ahead here. So let me start to work through some of your feedback. Gloria in Canandaigua on the phone first. Hi, Gloria. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for talking about this. That is such a beautiful area.
It
I'm
is.
I'm so excited that you're thinking about a park. Way back, several years back, I gave some money towards, somebody was trying to have flowers on the bridge. I never heard whatever happened with that. But at any rate, I will also want to know, you know, you're talking about RG&E and all of the buildings and all that. Who was there before? I'm assuming Haudenosaunee, the Native Americans, and I would like to know what their thoughts are about that area.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Gloria, and our guests are nodding right along with you there. Lisa, Bill, yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, this is it's a good question, Gloria, and yes, this was obviously Native American lands prior to the late 1700s when water power was harnessed here. And if you would love to have you come to the design workshop on May 4th, because we have asked the Native American representatives to come and give us a presentation of the history of their people with the river and with High Falls. So we want to understand that and make sure that as this project moves forward, that those stories and those cultural histories are captured in both the design and any of the interpretive features that are going to be here. So we will have representatives from the Haudenosaunee, and I apologize on the name, Seneca Nation, coming to speak to us at the workshop.
It's right there on the list that I'm looking at, the upcoming workshop from representatives from Ganondagan, the Haudenosaunee community, notes on Seneca history, et cetera. So, and get an email from Peter, very similar. So, Peter, I think that addresses that point. Gloria, it's a really good question. Thank you for asking that. And I think keeping the full history of the land in mind is vital. And so I'm glad to hear our guests are interested in doing that as well. Thank you, Gloria. I'm right down the list here. We've got a lot to work through now. You've sparked a lot of interest in High Falls State Park. Roy in Rochester next. Hi, Roy. Go ahead.
Yeah. I guess I maybe came in late. I just do other things. I was a volunteer at the prior urban historic park funded by the state and built into High Falls there. I'm not sure about the optimism about it all. I was told at one point, really, actually, only bars were going to make the neighborhoods, that why are we doing this? And that mayor to mayor, the farther it got away from the day they signed the park, the city lost interest. They didn't want to pay the money back. They, you know, closed things down, cut the staff off, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't a very pretty sight.
Right, Roy. And what you're pointing out is accurate. There's been a lot of hope and a lot of sometimes promises, but not a lot of delivery. Is that kind of what you're saying?
That, on both ends, the city was happy to get the money to do that, but they really thought they could just talk the state out of continuing for 22 years to pay money out on it. And the city didn't have any. First, it was under parks. Then there was an art liaison. Then there was things. No infrastructure with that at all till Tom Richards finally killed it. And on the state end, their parks department wasn't very well staffed or very thoughtful about it at the other parts. It would be, I had visitors who would tell me that, oh my God, you've got this site out there. I see this. Do you realize what a space you have? And they were, you know, there were visitors from out of town who thought like, well, why aren't we interested in that? And the other part of it, you know where parts of the old visitor center went? The cab and things like that went over to the Genesee Brew House because that should be our visitor center.
Well, Roy, so before I kick it over to our guests, I just want to add, and I'm not doing PR for a state park. They can do their own PR. I want to add a little bit of context, though, because Roy is giving us, I think, a valuable look at the history of the space and why some people might not believe it until they see it, which I get. First of all, what you're describing when you said, you know, the city of Rochester decided it had to be a bar district, there's a couple of points. It is not mutually exclusive that there could be a thriving business district near a state park. If you think about Watkins Glen State Park, you literally can park and go across the road, walk through Watkins Glen State Park, which is one of the great places in the world, in my opinion. But then you can come out of the state park and just walk right over and get a slice of pizza. You can sit down and get a beer at any number of places. So it's not mutually exclusive that a space near a state park would have thriving business. But what the city of Rochester was doing, what you're describing under, I think, Bill Johnson's administration, was they saw the empty spaces and they wanted to make this a business district. And they tried to turn it into a nightlife district. And that didn't really work. And it's hard to always explain why people do want to gravitate to certain spaces and not others, or why people don't want to go out at night to certain spaces, or why people don't want to put apartments or condos in certain spaces. But it didn't really work down here about 20 years ago. So your point on that's correct. But I don't think that forecloses the idea that a state park could work. And one of the questions we got separate to Roy's comments are about who's going to manage this and who's going to pay for this. So, you know, Roy is I don't think he's cynical. I think he's realistic. He's looking at history. But I also think it's valuable to learn lessons from what worked and what didn't work. And maybe a state park will lead to more interest nearby. And then maybe naturally, instead of a city trying to kind of plan the idea of a business district, maybe that comes up organically. But on the state park question, let me give our guest space to respond to Roy and tell us, to Andrew's email, who would pay for this, who's likely to manage it, and have you learned some lessons from the past?
I'm going to let Bill talk in a second, but I just wanted to say that I agree with Roy that the idea of an entertainment district and what went on in High Falls, I'm glad that the state funded the restoration of this and creation of a historic district in High Falls to preserve those buildings, to preserve the history, to create the visitor center, which was operating until 2019. But they were building blocks, right? And now the BB station is gone. We have this land that the state is interested in creating a park in. And I think we learn from the past that the process needs to be inclusive. We need to get many multiple parties and stakeholders involved in giving voice to what could or could not be successful in developing this area economically, environmentally, educationally, socially. It's so important to have the voices heard. And when you do that, people have buy-in. They feel that it's their space. It becomes powerful when you give everyone a voice. So, and certainly the state has much deeper pockets than the city, but I also think that the park is going to need a friends organization to pay for the extras that we're going to want.
Bill?
I would say Roy's questions or comments are spot on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those are the kinds of things you don't like to hear, but they are the reality, because I think every administration from Ryan and Johnson really tried to think about the programming and the costs of associated with operating the cultural district in High Falls. We had a laser light show here.
Yep.
In fact, I think a lot of that original equipment is probably still hanging around down there. how far-fetched is it to resurrect it? But, we had some good partners at that time. Kodak was still an active company, and they participated and did that laser light show at their expense. And then, over time, budgets get tight and operating and programming spaces, just really isn't where the city's able to do that on a long-term sustained basis. They provide, an awful lot of other critical services. These become somewhat discretionary when operating budgets are considered. So, really day one leadership breakfast on May 2nd, these are the critical questions. How are we going to program this? How are we going to pay for it? And that's going to be not only the park proper, the area that becomes dedicated as a state park, but the adjacent streets and sidewalks and the public realm all around on both east and west sides. Is the state coming in and going to just manage the state side? But then who's taking care of all of the other spaces that are gateways to the park or those corridors that lead to the park?
Going to have to be a lot of coordination with the city and the business community.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yeah. And so, and it sounds like that's happening.
Yeah, I would say so. We've been out getting ready for this design workshop and walking into businesses up and down both St. Paul, State Street, Lake Ave. And we're seeing, people saying they're very interested. And, part of the charge to the design and planning team in the RFP that the state put out and that they have respondents to now is to consider the adjacent neighborhoods. We're not just design the park itself, we have to anticipate how, or actually guide how, the park can assist the economic stability of the adjacent neighborhoods, but also how can the adjacent neighborhoods support the park.
Right.
You talk about going across the street from, you know, in Seneca and getting a slice of pizza. Well, what can the residents and the businesses provide that won't be down in the park necessarily, and activate the streets on both sides?
Right.
Roy, I really appreciate the call, and that history is, I think, to Bill's point, it is spot on. And I think they're considering that. But I also don't blame you for having a I'll believe it when I see it mentality. So thank you, Roy. Hal in Rochester next on the phone. Hi, Hal. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to call about is for years and years and years, and one of your guests talked about the falls being 96 feet high. And I would like to suggest that in the spring, the Rochester Genesee River always used to flood and flood over the west side of downtown. So they decided to make the Genesee River hold more water. So I have a question. How could they have done that? Anybody going to make a quick answer, a quick guess?
Is this a science quiz, Hal?
Let's see. Court Street Dam.
Court Street Dam.
Between 1914 and 1918, if they put a dam in it, that would... They dredged it, and they took 16 feet off the fall. So the high fall is now 80 feet, and it's been that way for 100 years, and everybody still keeps saying 96 feet.
Well, I'm going to go out there with a tape measure. Either way, it's pretty big.
That's interesting.
You can check right here, Rochester History, the quarterly magazine that the library put out, fall of 1992, Geology and Industrial History of the Rochester Gorge, Part 1, page 30. Has that information on it.
Hal, I would never question your specifics, and I appreciate that. That's a great little history lesson, and thank you very much, Hal. So whether it is 96 feet or 80, 81 feet, that's the High Falls waterfall, and a little bit of history from Hal there. Let me kind of go through a long list of email questions. I'll get as many as I can here. Jerry writes to say, the Niagara Falls has an elevator on the New York State side that goes to the base of the falls. Perhaps there are lessons to be learned there. Bill?
Yeah. The city had put out a request for proposals. They selected a design consultant to work on an elevator connection down to the lower level of the falls and the park area, essentially from your office,
right. Lisa,
which is in the Waterworks building. Or adjacent near the Granite Mills Granite Mills Park, which is on the near the Platt Street Bridge or the Pont d'Arène. And I think they may be waiting to see if this process of design can help inform where an elevator might best fit. But certainly an elevator. If anybody's been to Poughkeepsie and seen. I think it's high over, I forgot the name. They took our old railroad bridge and converted it to a walkway. And it's a very, very big attraction in Poughkeepsie. And they've added walk over the river or something. And
we talked about it on this program. Yeah, actually, it was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely remarkable to see what they have done with that space.
Yeah. And they have since added an elevator from the bridge deck down to the lower, to the Hudson River below.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great point, Jerry. Yep. Yeah. Great point. So that sounds like that's in play here. Ken in Fairport says, will I be able to kayak in the Genesee below the falls when the park opens?
Ooh. I don't know.
I think Lisa's renderings might have shown that.
Yeah, right. Right.
And I do think that, you know, part of the whole programming is what activities are going to be in there. You know, what are the potential restrictions on it. I think if you go down there now, you'll see the falls and the river just roaring. And no, you wouldn't can be able to kayak today, but in the summer months, I would see that would be a possibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that come up in the requests? That's not as high on the list as picnicking and other events.
No, kayaking didn't make the list, but it was on the questionnaire. But to Ken's point, it is a point, unlike a lot of other areas along the river in Rochester, where you could dip your toe in the water because it's level.
Yeah, one of the renderings, I think it's on the west side of the Genesee. You see this kind of flat, accessible beach, and people kind of just sticking their toes in, and that's realistic. That could be coming.
It could be. I mean, it because it's not a cliff face,
right?
It could be accessible.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
Ken, I guess the answer to that is you're going to have to wait and see. A lot of work to go before you'd be able to kayak in there, but maybe. Tom writes to say, I am more than a little terrified about what the state park will end up being. The waterfall is awesome on its own. Talking about designs and development usually means displacing nature and putting a human stamp on an area. That scares me. Design a park that still just looks like nature untouched by humans, and I think you will have succeeded. That's Tom.
It's an interesting point. You know, a state park could be programmed and designed as a completely natural, into a natural restoration, or, you know, it can have the activities that you mentioned and Lisa's mentioned, but it's really going to be probably end up somewhere in the middle. But certainly, you know, leaving space for nature. I think when we ask the question, who are we doing this for? Mother Earth has to be one of them. And this site, you know, all along the river has, since the late 1700s, early 1800s, has been dumped in and trampled on, filled. So we haven't really had a natural river here for a couple hundred, well, for, you know, 100 and, well, 200 years,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, we blast out for these raceways for water wheels and turbines. Well, all that rock just went right into the river. And there was no sanitary sewers, you know, for a long time, and everything just got dumped in the river. So it would be good to restore a significant portion of this.
You want to add to that, Lisa?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody, this is a brownfield cleanup site. And so whatever brush or grass or trees is all coming out, we're starting from scratch. So it is a good opportunity to think about how it used to look, right? And create some of those types of environments and spaces in the new park.
All right, Sally in Rochester next on the phone. Hi, Sally, go ahead.
Hi, Evan, and a special hello to you, Bill Price. Boy, I miss the wonderful days that we worked together down there. I was
Hi,
the
Sally.
Luckiest person on earth to be able to spend more than 20 years in the Waterworks building. I gave tours. I was Chester the Bear. I owned the art gallery business, which featured more than, are you ready for the number, Bill?
It
was 10,000 artists.
Wow.
That brought work, local artists that brought work and showed their work in the High Falls Fine Art Gallery.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful little souvenir shop where we sold Rochesteria. We were gifts from the city that's crazy about itself. Bill, any kind of help you need down there, I hope you'll call me.
Sally, absolutely. Yeah, and it's great to have, your perspective on, you know, all of the different layers that we had down here for so long, and made it a very, very interesting place, and want to try and bring a lot of that back and add to it.
Thank you.
It was wonderful then, and I hope it's going to be just as wonderful, if not more so, in the future.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you very much. Last question from Chad, who says, so it sounds like if we're lucky, maybe by the time the next eclipse arrives in Rochester, we'll have a fully open state park. No, Chad, that's 2144. Now, Chad's being a little cheeky, and he's just saying, you know, it's not like it's going to be a while. It's not going to be next year. It's not going to be this year. But it is also, it's probably less time or around the same time between right before the pandemic to now. That's not that much time. And a lot could absolutely happen before 2030 in this decade. Fair, Lisa?
Fair.
Okay. So even if it happens in phases, I think it's important for those of us in the journalist community to keep asking questions about how it's happening and how people can get involved. So maybe this is a good place to end the conversation. Bill, Lisa, you want to remind the community on how they can get involved in lending their voice to this.
Yeah. Quickly to Chad's point, we'll wait and see. Don't wait and see. Keep an eye on the public engagement and the whole planning and design process that's going to go on now, probably for a year and a half, I would say, and then possibly getting into final design of some of the features as cleanup and areas are ready for development and construction. But it's not like nothing is going on. So please keep in mind that there are going to be planning and design meetings and opportunities for engagement all through this process. And it starts on May 3rd. And that second, third, and fourth of May, leadership breakfast on the second, a community conversation at CDC Rochester, and then the workshop on May 4th.
Saturday, May 4th for the workshop. All of those dates, will have the detailed information in our show notes when we post it later today. And they'd love to hear you. If you really have strong thoughts or you want to learn more, or you want to be there, be part of it. They're opening the doors for you. I want to thank Bill Price, who is acting executive director for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Let's keep these conversations going. You saw a tremendous amount of interest. Thank you for being here. And our thanks to Lisa Barron, Executive Board Chair for Greentopia. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Evan.
Also, Lisa is the recipient of the recent Seneca Park Zoo Society's Environmental Innovation Awards, the Lifetime Achievement Award. But, you know, you tack on a state park in High Falls, and you can get two Lifetime Achievement Awards, Lisa. So there you go.
Thanks, Evan.
More connections coming up.